For their teachers and parents, it may be difficult at times to imagine that the teenage girls in their classrooms or homes will someday become women. Sherry Ennis has written a book on the socialization of young women, and here to talk with her about it is Talking History's Dennis Mihalik.
Thank you, Brian. March is Women's History Month. Here to give us some perspective on how girls are socialized to become women is Sherry Ennis, an assistant professor of English at Miami University of Ohio, and the editor of Debutantes and Delinquents, 20th Century American Girls' Cultures, available in paperback from the New York University Press. Welcome, Professor Ennis.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
You began your introduction to Debutantes and Delinquents with a statement, and I quote, "In many ways, girls are inconsequential," unquote. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's one of the reasons why I'm so interested in studying girls' culture, is because in mainstream American society, girls often get shunted aside. They're regarded as less important than men, women, and even boys. Frequently, they're stereotyped as frivolous, much more so than boys are. This is an image that pervades our culture basically everywhere. For instance, we can think about girls and boys as they're represented in toys. G.I. Joe and Barbie come to mind. We find that G.I. Joe confronts his enemies with a hand grenade, while Barbie presumably just whips out a hair dryer. G.I. Joe is concerned with life and death issues. Barbie's main interest is what color bikini to wear on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Now, the subtitle is 20th Century Girls' Cultures, plural. What are these specifically when you're talking about girls' cultures? What are you talking about?
Well, I use the plural there to take into account the fact that girls' cultures in the United States today, it's not one monolithic culture that has been set in place, but many, many different ones that are shaped by a multitude of factors, including race, ethnicity, social class, and regional location. Thus, for instance, Vicky Ruiz, one of the scholars in my book, she discusses the lives of adolescent Mexican-American women who clearly would have a very different experience about what it means to be a girl and how that defines their cultures than a mainstream white middle-class girl growing up on the eastern seaboard.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, have these girls' cultures always existed, or is this a recent phenomenon?
Well, that's really a tricky question, because we don't really know for sure when girls' culture developed. We can say some things about when a clear girls' culture started to exist. We can say that there was a distinct girls' culture in the late 18th and 19th centuries, a culture that flourished in the 20th. And girls' culture scholar Lynn Vallone has argued that girls' culture was well entrenched throughout the 19th century. What changed, of course, in the 20th century was suddenly, with the media and with the press and all kinds of other inventions, girls' culture could saturate our society in a very different way than it had previously.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly all of us are familiar with this kind of saturation, girls' culture icons ranging from strawberry shortcake to Nancy Drew are familiar to probably the majority of your listeners.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we say a culture of or for girls, I mean, what makes it up? You talk about commodities and components. I mean, what actually are the various parts of these cultures?
Okay, we're talking about a vast arena of different things that influence girls. I think it helps to break this down into two different groupings. First, there's the things that are actually manufactured and created for an audience of girls. This is probably what most of us are most familiar with. The Barbie dolls, the baby dolls, the clothing, the popular series novels like Sweet Valley High. And there's also the things that the girls themselves actually create or develop play an active role in shaping. The examples include girls' zines, self-authored zines, girls' websites on the internet.
Explain a zine. I'm not sure our audience would understand that.
Created magazines invented and authored by girls, and there's many different ones, but they are basically a way that the girl can play a creative role in shaping the culture around her rather than merely being someone who consumes the commodities out there that are manufactured by companies.
Oh, okay, I see.
Mm-hmm. And it's all of these commodities and components all interact with one another. It's not like any of them are really isolated. They all interact and intermingle and influence different girls in certainly different ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we take a recent example and a controversial example from the media, say the pop star Madonna. How would she influence girls' culture if she does?
Well, Madonna is a good example because she's someone who obviously has influenced, now generations of girls. And what's interesting, I think, is the complexity of girls' culture and how it's influenced by someone like a pop star. Certainly the more traditional way is of looking at girls' culture has been to see it as co-opted, as something that doesn't really allow girls much of a chance for agency. But how girls actually deal with Madonna is a good example of how they have gained a great deal of agency in sort of creating their relationship to her through clothing, through fan clubs, through internet sites and what have you, that played again a very active role as creators as well as consumers, which I think is one of the really interesting things that's happening with girls' culture, is that there are increasingly a number of ways that girls can take a more active role than perhaps in previous years.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the like a Madonna, an agency that is acting on your own and creating something mm-hmm. here, does this tend more towards the delinquent than it does the debutante?
Well, that's what's so fascinating about girls' culture, is that we can't say that, you know, there's just these sort of two opposite poles of debutante and delinquent. Madonna is a good example of someone who would influence both sides and every girl in between too. Girls' culture is something that's it's very much a hodgepodge and very much something that we can't just sort of say that there's, you know, the traditional poles of bad girl and good girl.
Mm-hmm. Now on the good girl side, I mean, for well over a century now, institutions like the Girl Scouts have been influential in socializing girls into women, have they not?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Now, how would you explain that role? I mean, is there any agency in that, or is that where mothers, grown women, are trying to socialize young girls into a specific mold?
And again, here we see all kinds of different ways that the Girl Scouts actually influence girls. There certainly are ways that the Girl Scouts are shaping girls into certain models of adulthood and of femininity that are accepted by the larger society. But there's also all kinds of ways that girls rebel against such formations, and all kinds of ways that girls go through Girl Scouts and come away with very different messages, perhaps, than the ones that the organization were founded with, training girls.
Mm-hmm. What about things like television and advertising? They also come in for heavy criticism, usually in ways that that they're influencing children, among them girls, negatively.
And actually, that's something that I find disturbing about the popular discourse about girlhood today, because you're right, there is this sort of monolithic view that television and advertising are just co-opting girls and making them into sort of commodity-hungry young women who are interested in nothing more than where they're going to buy their next doll. But I think there's many ways in which girls and young women resist that kind of pull, in many ways in which they use TV and advertising in ways that perhaps their creators did not always assume it would be used that way.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example of that?
Well, for instance, with advertisements, I can think about some women I know who actually created a magazine of their own, a girls' magazine, in which they used advertisements from the mainstream press, but they put the advertisements in this magazine they made for distribution to their friends in a very tongue-in-cheek fashion, in very much in a way that sort of undermined the main selling point in ways that I'm sure the manufacturers never intended.
Mm-hmm. Now, with the delinquent side of this, even though, as you pointed out before, it isn't necessarily just polls, I'm interested, is there any research that explains who is socialized and why, and who rebels instead and why?
Well, again, this is a huge issue. But I think what's fascinating to look at is basically the multiplicity of experiences that girls have actually had over the 20th century and before. One of the things that some of the authors in my collection try to tease out is exactly what you're bringing up. Why is it that some girls rebel? Why is it that some don't? For instance, in Delinquents and Debutantes, one of the authors, Miriam Forman-Brunel, writes about the rebellion of babysitters in the 1950s. Another author, Rachel Devlin, writes about juvenile delinquent girls who rebelled against society's conventions in the mid-20th century. So these authors and others are trying to understand all kinds of girls who rebel against society's dictates. But again, I think it's very important to look at this from a sort of a case-to-case scenario, because there's so many very different reasons for girls to rebel in different social settings, in different regional settings, and what have you.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, would the current practice of like tattooing and the piercing of various body parts, is this a girl's rebellion that's going on now?
Without a doubt, yes. Definitely. But again, you can't ever say that it's just rebellion, because you could also say at the same time that some girls are perhaps doing it to be more like their friends, or more like what young women assume is a desirable image of femininity in one way or another. But there's also girls certainly who are doing it for rebellious purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And anything like that. It's shaping girls in all kinds of different ways at the same moment, and you can never really say it's just an act of rebellion or just an act of conformity either.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I want to thank our guest, Professor Sherry Innes, the editor of Delinquents and Debutantes, published by the New York University Press.